You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Radio MMT respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land from which we are broadcasting, the Wurundjeri people, and we are broadcasting to the Kulin nations. Our focus is economics, that is, how stuff is produced and distributed. We recognise that for many tens of thousands of years, First Nations peoples' connection to country successfully embodied the world's oldest continuous economy, which was catastrophically disrupted by genocide and displacement. We acknowledge that we have much to learn to reshape our current extractive and exploitive system to achieve sustainable prosperity for everyone.
Radio MMT. Economics for the rest of us with Anne
and Kev.
Radio MMT.
Looking at the world through the lens of modern monetary theory.
Radio MMT.
Macroeconomics for a well-being economy.
Macroeconomics? Like, isn't that incredibly boring?
No, Kevin, it's incredibly interesting. It's all about who gets what and why.
Who gets what and why? Okay, I'm in.
Radio MMT at gmail.com.
Incredibly interesting macroeconomics for the rest of us. Welcome to Radio MMT. This is the Radiothon edition of Radio MMT. You're normally with Anne and Kev. Anne's run away this week. And as any listeners will know, Anne is the organised person, and I'm the fellow that just slings in and does stuff. So this will be a bit of a ramshackle show. However, we've got a couple of guests to fill in for Anne today. We have James and Alistair. James, how are you doing?
How are you doing, Kev?
Very well. And Alistair?
Hey there.
Excellent. Now, this is a Radiothon show, and we need to raise money for the station. It's also a macroeconomics show, and so the two things go hand in hand. This poor, struggling station is the result of a poor macroeconomic situation where there's too much money at the wrong end of town, and this little station here figuratively, exists on the smell of an oily rag. It's not flush with funds. We are at the wrong end of the business cycle, so we need your donations. And there aren't that many people that donate to this. It's a very small community, the 3CR community. So what typically happens is that there's a couple of very generous people, but what I'd like to call upon for anybody who's listening, either to the show live or on the podcast, is small amounts. Lots of people giving small amounts makes things happen. Think of us as the person at the intersection who's going to clean your windscreen, and you're going to just chuck us a bit of coin. That'll do. Like we'll take anything. We're not proud. We need to exist, and we exist on a very thin margin because of the macroeconomic situation, which favours rich people and doesn't favour voices like this. And yet here we are talking about how the economy actually works. That's what we're going to do this week. We're going to talk about why you need to support this station, and we're also going to talk about why Radio MMT or the Modern Money Theory School of Macroeconomics is important. James, why is it important that our listeners should have some understanding of modern monetary theory?
Well, like it or not, whether you think it's boring or incredibly fascinating, like a couple of money nerds like us do, money is all around us, and it affects us, and it's in the media, and it drives politics. And thinking that money is just the province of the rich people, and it often is, neglects the real source of money in a society like Australia. The real source of money in Australia is the government and government spending.
This flies in the face of the mainstream narrative, though, because the mainstream will tell us that the government is a burden, that we have to pay our taxes, and that it's the government who's just there taking money off us so that they can run their fat budgets and kowtow to their mates and the rest of it. How do we get this so wrong?
Maybe we should clarify. We're talking about money, not wealth. It's the source of money, well, not wealth. And what is money?
Well,
a lot of people use it in a pretty indiscriminate way.
Okay, so we need some definitions here, and this is kind of where the conversation gets interesting. What is money? And the mainstream understanding of money basically is that it's just there. If you have a look at mainstream economics, they don't explain where money comes from, other than to say that it was a kind of like a natural evolution from the barter system, and that when people got sick of hauling oranges and cows on their to do a direct exchange, they set up a ledger system, and that's where money came from. That's kind of like the mainstream understanding of money. What's wrong with that story?
Well, that kind of story you hear lay people repeat it often because it kind of makes a kind of sense, but it's really just a thought experiment that people like Adam Smith came up with back in the day, and they were trying to figure out what the purpose and the value of money is. No, money is an institution of government, and it's just a way to measure economic activity in one way, and in another way, it's just a way of mobilising resources.
Well, now this is the story that that we hear, and I think this comes to the core of modern monetary theory is the origin story, because the mainstream economics, the neoclassical economics we have at the moment, just regards money as something that's there, and which came from the private sector, essentially barter system, people trading. And they think from that point that the government borrows money from the private citizens that made the money somehow, and that it needs to be paid back. Whenever you say barter in the MMT community, red flags go up everywhere. Barter exists. I live on a barter foundation quite a lot, but that didn't mean that I started an economy. It just means that I swap things.
I think it's important to say that we're not saying that barter trades don't exist. That is trading one commodity for another commodity, one thing for another thing. That's very different from saying that there's a barter system, which is, a systemic way of measuring goods between people, and but with just objects.
And there's essentially two competing theories. One's metal theory, or M theory of money. This is this idea that barter came from coins being cast out of precious metals, and so they had intrinsic value as a resource that was just swapped for different things, as opposed to the modern understanding of money. Say I build I build a van for you.
Yeah.
And you...
I'd like to see it. Good vans. It'd have to be a very good van for you to build one for me. Very high standards.
Well, I'll just give it to you. Maybe I didn't build it. And then you give me something back, and there's your barter. Maybe you gave me a piano, and I'm happy with the piano. And
do you play the piano?
I do. But
any good?
I haven't played for years, but...
Have you watched that show on the ABC called The Piano?
I've seen the shorts. I want to watch it.
Yeah, I watched the first episode last
night. I don't
actually
watch TV much.
Neither do I, because I live in a van. It's a bit hard. But it's a good thing.
Yeah, I've heard it's good.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I digress.
Apparently people cry a lot, so it's good too.
Well, they do. There's all these shy people that come out of their little rooms and they start playing the piano in like train stations, and they're really good.
I've done that when they put the pianos around Melbourne. Anyway,
we're getting distracted.
So here's the difference between... Say I give you the van, and you go, I don't have any pianos today. What am I going to do? And I go, well, I've heard you make bread. And you go, yeah, I make bread, but I've only got a small oven. I can only make 4 loaves a week. So I go, okay, well, how about you give me a loaf of bread each week for the next 5 years? And that's equal in value, as far as I'm concerned, to the van I'm giving you now. And we've just set up a credit-debt relationship. And in a credit-debt relationship, there's always a creditor and a debtor.
The thing about this, and we've had this discussion a few times on this show, is that barter works a lot better when you apply a monetary system to it, which is to say, a barter system didn't create the monetary system, but it's a lot easier to exchange things, to swap things, my piano with the van, if we know what they're worth in terms of money.
That's one of the things of money it's known for as an index of value.
Index of value, yeah. So, but people get confused. I think because there's this index of value, that's where money must have come from. Mm. And that's an incorrect assumption, and that's the basic incorrect assumption of the mainstream economists.
Story. Yeah, so just to finish my analogy.
So I
know Kev might be, be out of town or something. So I go, hey, could you just write that down on a bit of paper? Like one loaf of bread for the next 5 years. And then all of a sudden my friend goes to the hospital and I can't pay the doctor, but I got this note.
Right.
Kev, bread, next 5 years.
It's good.
I pass it on to them.
Yeah.
And there you're starting to see the emergence of paper money.
Right.
You know, it's not because the paper's worth $10,000 or $80,000 and it's got gold in it. It's nothing like that. It's a credit relationship which is being passed around. And so cut to now, kings used to do this to finance, you know, their armies and so on. They didn't want to like have to feed them every day when there wasn't a war. They'd pay them in these coins or notes, and then those coins or notes were good for the population.
Yeah. So and there's many, many stories about the origins of money. The one that we like best, I think, is the Graeber 5,000 Years of Debt novel. I'm going to have to read it again. I think it's the sort of book you have to read three times. And the end of that book made far more sense than the beginning, which was just a history lesson. So, but it goes into the origins of money. And there's no evidence that a barter system ever created an economy. A barter system works better when there's an economy around it. So I'm going to tell you this story because I've been trying to figure out a way to explain the difference to these things. I'm actually catching up with my ex and her partner back at my old place at the moment, and I drive them nuts because they're resistant. I've been trying to find a simple way to explain things. And this is kind of based partially on fact. So I think there was actually a community in Peru or South America somewhere, goat herders essentially, living a traditional lifestyle, and there was a mining operation that wanted to start up in the area. What the mainstream economists would say is that these goat herders had a system of exchange, and it was a barter system, and it might have turned into a monetary system, which kind of, okay, right, yeah, you can see some reason why that might make some sort of sense. But the real story for this one was that there's a government that wants to encourage this mining operation to occur because it wants to, for many reasons, it wants to access the resources of the mining operation, be it that they need iron ore or be it that they need to set up an international market or whatever. And they need the goat herders to work in the mine because they're available labour in the area. But the goat herders or the traditional people don't want it because they don't need to. They're a self-sufficient community. They have everything they need and they don't want to work in the mine. The government imposed a tax on the goat herders. They imposed a track tax. They said, well, that track didn't just happen. We had a bit to do with that. They impose a goat tax. They say, well, you've got a commodity there that's worth something and you live in our community, so you need to contribute. And so they start imposing these taxes on the traditional community. Mm. But of course, they haven't got any money. And they go, well, how are you going to pay for that? And they say, well, you might need to go and do some work in the mines. That'll get you the coin that you need. And they go, well, you know, we've got to spend time looking after the goats. And they go, well, not all of you and not all the time. You've got a bit of spare time. So do a bit of goating and then do a bit of mining and we'll sort it out. So then the community then is introduced to money and they pay their taxes. But they also get paid more than just the taxes. They get paid, and out of that money comes a tax, and then they've got spending coin. And then you have the establishment of private markets because they can use that money to buy food that doesn't come from their insular community. They can explore outside variances. So what you see from this example is a government using a monetary system to utilize a resource, which is the mine, and to curb activity in one field and place it in another. Now, that's a partially true story.
If you want to source, the hut tax, and this was a light bulb moment for me, you know, yeah. Like getting switched onto MMT was Warren Mosler, like, telling the hut tax story, and it's like...
What's the hut tax story?
Well, the British and French colonised Africa and parts of the Pacific and, you know, all these places, and they wanted to extract resources. That was the whole point of it.
Right? Yeah.
So, same thing, set up plantations, whatever it is, and we want the local population to come and work as very low priced labour on our resource extraction schemes to make us wealthy.
And of course
we're good, we've got an economy, we actually like to, you know, do things our way, we're good. And they're like, well, we're going to have to impose a hut tax. What's that? Well, you're going to have to pay us these, you know, coins, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to pay this much, and it's this much per hut every such and such. And they're like, no, we're good. We're really not into it. But anyway, where are we going to get these, you know, coins? Oh, okay. You can go and work on the plantations or whatever is and have the coins. And, you know, you can look this up on Wikipedia. It's got a lot of references to,
there's
documentation. And the whole thing was, it was a hut tax because it's like, well, what if we don't pay the tax? see that hut, we burn it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say the thing about those stories is what you notice is in common there is you've got some kind of authority that's coming in coercion. And they're effectively, coercively taking over, they're enclosing part of something that was once, public property, the land where the tracks were put in, or they're saying actually, those goats that you all already own, those huts that you already have, we need to impose a liability on those, a tax liability, in order to coerce people to do things that were in the interest of the governing authority. Some people, I think, hear stories like that and get a little bit scared about that because that's the coercive side of taxation and the money story.
It's mean.
Very mean, and in some ways it's off-putting. One of the things I like to remind myself when I hear those stories is we live in a democracy, and so theoretically the priorities of the government are the ones that we elect. And so when we remember that money is basically a public institution and we elect governments more or less, there's obviously huge caveats around that, depending on the type of democratic system you have and state capture and all that sort of stuff. Ultimately, the government works for us, and so their priorities should be our priorities. And so when they're using the institution of money, it's not, to hopefully stand over the poor goat herders or the people in their huts. It's actually to work in the public good.
Now, I'm going to speak about the goat herders a bit more, because not everybody in the goat herding community was entirely happy, right? They got their way of life, but there's some young teenagers in there that knew about stuff in the outside world and they wanted to access it and they weren't allowed to. All of a sudden, with the monetary system being imposed upon them and the resources being up, and they got some coin in their pocket, well, they're buying themselves a mobile phone and the rest of it as well. So, and Anne would say, I had this argument with Anne the whole time. Not argument, we had this discussion because we get on very well. and she says...
Anne doesn't argue anyway.
Well, she goes, we can make a monetary system work, and like you're saying, it's in a democratic community, if you don't like the way that the people who are controlling the money are behaving, then you vote them out and you vote in people that reflect your values more. But that's an imperfect system, but it's the one we've got. It's nothing is as simple as it seems, I guess. Now, talking of money.
One interesting thing out of that is that you have a constant, fairly inelastic demand for the currency, because those who, have tax liabilities, which is most people, in addition to the sales tax and all that stuff we pay, you have to come up with that coin to give to the government. And so there's it anchors the value of that money with a constant demand. And that's one of the quite important things about.
And speaking of coin.
Speaking of coin.
We are doing a radiothon.
This is a radiothon. And to give you some there are far fewer donors and subscribers to this station than I initially thought. I'm a bit familiar with Triple R, and they've got such a strong operation. And I thought, well, 3CR's been around as long as Triple R. It's not. We're a fragile community.
Where's the piece? Where's the 3CR piece of that Triple R pie?
Well, and the reason is because this is a diverse station. You will not hear a radio program like this anywhere else in Australia, possibly not in the world. Lots of podcasts, and if you're listening to this on the podcast, it's because it came from a radio show, and that's because 3CR hosts these sorts of things, the things that people can't listen to. People that would listen to the commercial stations would drive themselves insane. They'd pull over and I don't know what they'd do. They couldn't handle it. But you can, and you listen to the station, that's terrific.
Do you think... Oh, no, I won't interrupt.
Such as Misha Herman has... And I'm not going to give the amounts because it's not a competition. We'll take anything. We'll take... If you've got some coin and you're on the right end of the ledger in this economy of ours, I'm surprised that you're listening to this this station and this program, because we attract a fairly, left-leaning, broke kind of audience most of the time. But good on you if you've got some coin in your pocket and you're listening to this show. I'm very impressed. Could you please donate, as Misha Herman did? Same did with James Mishy. Mark Flippo also contributed. Glenn Mason. Gab Reed, I know Mark, he's a mate of mine actually. So Gab Reed, good on you, Mark. Good on you, Gab Reed, as well. Lou, I'm not sure who Lou is, but I'm very happy with Lou. Joseph from the station. He's kicked in a bit. He's a very nice person. And as is Marion Cincotta. Who's Italian here?
Cincotta's a player for Carlton. So.
Cincotta. Okay, yeah. We'll go with Cincotta.
Saw him down at McLeod Footy Club a couple of weeks ago. Actually.
Thank you, Marion. Very much appreciated. But we're not even halfway to our target, and we need more people. I'd like to see lots of people giving small amounts. I think that's a really communal way of doing things, where everybody chips in $5, $10. But if you want to chip in more, we're not going to say no. So there's no problems with that whatsoever. You're on Radio MMT during this Radiothon edition of Radio MMT. We've got Luke on the phone. He's here to take your call. So that if you want to call up and organise to donate via the phone, Luke, he's a very handsome looking fella. He just waved to me. He looks intelligent. He looks very approachable, and he looks like he's the sort of person that you could trust with your money. So give Luke a call. What's the number there?
On 03-9419-8377.
But of course, in this high-tech world, there's more than one way to donate, and you might be sitting in front of a computer and you might want to use the keys at your fingertips. And James is about to give you the email, the, what do you call it? The
website.
The website.
Is that the interwebs?
You know, wow. You can see how technical I am. Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure if people just search for 3CR, they will be able to find it very easily. But if you want to do the full URL, it's 3cr.org.au.
Did you say 3CR? .org.au.
I said 3cr.org.au.
Excellent. And you could call, you could do it that way and send a pledge in.
Phone number for calls is 03-9419-8377.
Excellent. The reason doing this is because this is a lovely station. It's been here for many a long, long time.
Institution.
It's a Melbourne institution because it does odd shows like this. And if it if it didn't survive, you'd be sitting there by yourself thinking you're going nuts and that the economy is crazy and nobody else understands it like you do. But we do, because we're here and we're talking to you on the radio about how insane the economy is. We're going to get back to where our discussion before about the little
goat. The money story.
About the money story, right? So, and in that money story, we had the government spending money into existence by supporting a mining operation, and it's created money by spending it into existence, by typing onto a computer and saying, here you go, construction company, mining construction company, here's a ludicrous amount of money, now go and hire some crew from the goat herders, and all of a sudden you have an economy, there's money. That's where the money came from.
And they didn't get gold and some kind of money machine and feed the gold into the money machine and create notes.
And they didn't
borrow it. That's not how it
worked. And they didn't borrow it, and they didn't tax first. They taxed second. They funded the operation, and then they imposed the tax on the local population, not to because they needed the money, but to get the population to work, to incentivize them to work, to free up that resource, and also to impose the currency on them because if they have to pay tax in that currency, they have to earn that currency. And this is the whole story.
As Kelton says, they spend in order to tax. They do not tax in order to spend. And it's a very important, quite subtle sometimes, but very important distinction.
Yeah. So you go 6 months into this operation, 12 months into this operation, and you've got an economy. All of a sudden, there's a pool of money that exists.
And I think it's important to point out, the pool of money will only exist if the governing authority there decides only to tax less than they spent into the economy. That means that there has to be some sort of private saving. If that's the way they want to run it, then people have some form of savings that they can hold on to. So if other industries and other things are available in that currency, other than, you know, discharging their tax liability, then potentially they could have, you know, other operations going on.
So in this example, I think it's important to use an example. Not all the people working in the mine are from the goat herding village. They've got some contractors in there. They've got some managerial people in there. And the goat herding community is probably just the labourers. The rest of the mining operation, they want stuff. So there's going to be a supermarket set up nearby. There's going to be a petrol station set up nearby. There's going to be things that these people need. Now that the government has created this economy and they're paying people more than what they're taxing them, they're not just paying them, you know, $100 and then taxing them $100. They're paying them $1,000 and saying you need $100 in tax. You've now got people with coin in their pocket who can go and spend at these new shops that have that are open. Now, I know this sounds terribly commercial and capitalistic, etc., but this is how things operate. So what you see from this is that the government has created a private market, not the other way around. It wasn't the private market that funded the government. It was the government spending into the economy that created the private market by introducing the concept of money and mobilising resources. And so from that...
And a bunch of property law and labour law and all that stuff. Yeah. Like the idea that markets just like are this pure sort of like handed down straight from God kind of thing.
Equilibrium thing that finds its natural balance.
Yeah, it's just a farce. And if you look at history, it's very evident that you need all kinds of law set in place for markets to kind of operate. And our Professor Stephen Hale set up the course that James and I are doing, you know, like he said, you know, even in Adam Smith's day, you know, like even then it's stretching credibility with like a baker and a, you know, candlestick maker that...
Every exchange is going to be fair and equitable.
This kind of neoclassical story about an economy works, but... You know, even if you grant them that, that in a very small village, this kind of thing could explain how it's all going on, like to take it to a modern economy, it's farcical.
Well, the thing which I find about money, and I have this discussion all the time, is I think that money generates greed. It's an artificial way of accumulating power and influence, because people with money can buy influence, they can buy support, they can hire security guards, they can. And so there's
any form of wealth can create,
but whereas
sin, if you can't it, I mean, it's
well,
like,
yeah, except if you like, and we come back to the country that we exist in, from my limited understanding of Aboriginal culture, pre-colonial Aboriginal culture was that you were born into a role, into a community, and you had to, your status came from your real contribution to that community, because they didn't have a monetary system, they had other systems going on, which I know not nearly enough about, and for some strange reason, whenever I raise this, people go, oh, but it wasn't perfect. I'm not saying it was perfect. I'm just saying that the motivations for people that live outside a monetary system are different. When you can accumulate that wealth, that's a different way of accumulating respect than it is in a more, well, I regard
well,
as a more functioning
system. Accumulated wealth of cultural kind, which is, well, you know, phenomenal depth, but... Yeah, there's all kinds of, it's just very, very different, and you know, none of us are experts.
I think it's reasonably important to point out that in a non-monetary society, or I don't know, a pre-monetary society, it's not that that's inevitable, that there is no unemployment, because unemployment is created through those government operations and imposing the tax liability.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether the society is ultimately a fair and equitable one really depends on the application of the tax structures, transfers, you know, equitable distribution, whether everyone has access to jobs and...
It depends on the culture that is there. I did this really interesting country music tour back in Western Australia in the early 2000s, and we went to all these little towns over 2 months. And some of the towns were exactly the same. I recall driving in on a Saturday to this country town, and there was a kid riding his bike with his dog down the main street, which is fairly deserted. And a week later, I drove into another country town, and there was a kid riding his bike down the main street with his dog. And I go, what's going on? It was two different towns. And so they appeared to be the same town. But as soon as you stepped into the pub of these little towns, you'd notice that the whole culture of the town changed around some of the dominant figures in that town, like the families. We walked into this one pub and it was thriving. The pool table's going. They're playing really interesting music. And this is a little two-horse country hick town. And one of the big families, their son had just been overseas. He'd been travelling, doing the backpacking thing. And he'd come back and he's got his dreadlocks. And he was really interesting. And people just flocked around him. And that town was really interesting. The previous one was fairly flat.
Right.
And what occurred to me was that any community depends very much on the leading cultural figures in it. And so that would be the same for a non-monetary society as it is for a monetary society in many respects. It's just that I reckon money gives the opportunity for greedy people to accumulate.
Well, the things of value in a culture or a society or even a small community, the things that are valued are the things that tend to get replicated, aren't they?
I mean, money is one way to sort of gatekeep wealth and then have access to resources. And if you can control the way money is
distributed, then you can have an unequal access to wealth and resources. But it doesn't have to be that. I mean, you can imagine societies where someone, you know, holds up all grain distribution holds up all, you know,
we don't have to imagine
a monopoly on, you know, important farm animals. That
yeah, but we saw this in the post-war period, which was this very Keynesian period of economics, and the distribution of wealth was spread a lot more evenly between firms and workers because of a cultural redefining of how things should go after a really turbulent first half of the 1900s. They wanted some stability, and so they were more generous and more and equality was better.
Well, and the demand by workers was more fierce as well. I mean, we can talk about Hawke Keating and selling out the union movement if you want. We've talked about that before, Kevin, haven't we?
We have, and it actually started in the last year of the Whitlam government when Hayden dropped the full employment program that was set up, the Nugget Coombs White Paper, I think.
Yeah,
that was
and
set
how
up.
Many how many Liberal coalition governments had resisted dropping that, you know, when Treasury officials, neoclassicals, are going, I've got to get rid of this full employment thing. And they're like, nah, it's political death. We won't touch it.
Yeah, but that, again, it was done during the turbulence.
That's
of
why
the
you need Labor government to shocks. Do the things the coalition government can't do.
Well, that's certainly what they've done. We digress. So culture is obviously very important in the money story. But I guess we're just going to get back to the point that if you start your ledger from the wrong side, if you walked into that goat herding community that we saw and it was already in operation, and you saw that there was a supply of money, and you saw that the goat herders and everybody else was paying tax, you'd say, oh, the government's coming in and stealing our money. Well, they only got the money because the government put it there. And this is kind of the starting point for mainstream economics, is they don't understand where money comes from. They just think that it's just there. And so they think they have to pay it back. They think that if the government takes money from the private sector in the form of tax, it has to pay it back. But the only reason that the private sector had the money in the first place was because the government spent it into existence. Mm. So they're working on the wrong side of the ledger.
And they use bonds as this kind of like smokescreen.
Bonds is just really confusing. Bonds do nothing. Bonds recirculate money back into the economy. It bonds, when they are redeemed, is a form of government spending, and when they accrue interest, it's a form of government spending. There's no balancing of the books with bonds. It's just a way of recirculating.
Bill Mitchell says, you know, like it's a form of social security for the elite, the wealthy, you know, because they've got a, rather than a money asset like a cash account, which is earning negligible interest, you know, they've got like a zero risk asset, which is a government bond.
There's no risk in the government bond because
they're never going to default if they're fiat issuing currency. You know, with
they create the currency, they can redeem every bond, they can pay every cent of interest. It's a no risk.
But they get an interest payment guaranteed.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, it's Radiothon. We're going to have a slight break to let you contemplate and call Luke. Luke needs to be called so that you can pledge some money. What was the number that we're going to call Luke on again?
Luke's on 03-9419-8377.
Or you could go on the internet. James, where is the internet? Where is it?
Where is the internet? It's all around us, Kevin. It's 2025. It's in your pocket. It's on your computer screen.
It's in this
box. It might even be in your brain in one of those horrible brain trips. It's 3cr.org.au, 3cr.org.au.
Get in there and please help this station survive. We'll be back soon.
Stay tuned in to 3CR, community radio.
You're with Anne and Kev on Radio MMT.
At 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, Australia.
And wherever you get your podcasts.
Economics for the rest of us.
Hello, I'm Bill Mitchell. I'm a professor of economics of all things. And look, you're listening to Anne and Kev on Radio MMT on 3CR. And you can empower yourself to take action and defend your well-being and rights by listening to the program and getting the understandings that you will learn from that program. Take care.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, guys. And hello to our lovely listener. This is Anne, your usual co-host of Radio MMT, and I'm sorry to be missing the Radiothon show. I feel like I'm missing the party in the studio there. Anyway, I'm imagining you've all got your money, money, money disco moves on. If you are listening live, give the guys some love. Call now on 03 9419 8377, or SMS us on 04 88 809 855. And when you do that, leave a message of support or pledge a few dollars as well. Every bit really does count. Now, giving money does not mean you will be forever spammed by 3CR. Giving money does mean that you are keeping alive the only voice on radio that is spreading the word that the Australian Federal Government can never run out of Australian dollars. Of course, 3CR can run out of the dollars, as I am sure our regular listener gets it that we are not the currency issuers. So enjoy the rest of the show and hope to be back with you soon.
My God, Anne, where did you get that version of Money Money? That was an experience which I may never have to experience ever again if I have any choice. Nice to hear from you, Anne. Too bad you can't be here in person. Anne is otherwise disposed. A couple of texts. We've got Eric and Nigel in St Kilda. Says, keep at it, folks, and they're going to donate some money. I'm not going to say how much. I've got one here that says, loving the conversations, guys. If I pledge an amount of money, will you talk more about why the average Joe needs to know about MMT?
Part two. You have to come back in three weeks. We're trying. You've got to set up the foundations. That's why the neoclassicals win, because they've got a really simple story that sounds cute on the surface.
I agree with you in a way, because the household analogy works, and it's inside our brains because it's so simple and it's so easy to get.
And so wrong.
And we've been told for
it's
so long.
Very wrong, but it's just so easy to get, you know.
Intuition. Intuition can be completely 180 if you've been conditioned to think that this, you know, sky is pink or black is white.
So if we've talked about the origin story of money, and people always say, oh, the government could just print money. The government is the only institution that can print money. If you're printing money and you're not the government, you are counterfeiters. But the amount of money that is printed is such a minuscule part of the economy. What we need to be talking about is the real money in the economy, which is done when the government transfers into people's accounts amounts of money for all sorts of reasons. And this is where the discussion we're having came from before. If you have a bad culture, you end up with bad decisions. And we have a bad culture because we have a government that is caught by this concept that they have to pay back money, that we can't afford things that we need. And we had our current treasurer saying, oh, we can't even afford to do the things we want to do. You know, yes, you can. If the resources are there, you can. So why is understanding MMT important? Because it leads to good policy decisions if you understand your fiscal capabilities.
The more you learn about these things, in my view, the more you come to understand that mainstream orthodox economics is a political ideology dressed up as an economic theory, and it's substituting for that political ideology, because whenever you try and have these debates with such people, they immediately divert to ideological representations of how reality is. Whereas MMT is actually not aligned with any political ideology. You can have Bill Mitchell, who's a Marxist economist, goes regularly and is invited to Goldman Sachs to give them the inside on where he thinks the economic situation is going, and to form strategy to make money and to advise their clients to make more money. So
he's invited by Goldman Sachs, even though he's a raving lefty Marxist. And I think I'm going to jump on board with that, because the more you understand it, the better it is. But he's invited there because he has a much better understanding of how the economy works. What I'd really like to see is some of our people in the national broadcast and some of our politicians gain some of this understanding, so they could be doing some better reporting and making some better decisions. James, that would be nice.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Kevin. You, James. Do you think Radio National would get listeners for the MMT radio show on RN.
Yeah, I reckon maybe a late night show or something to start and see how she goes.
I think so. I think you know, a limited series to start with, talking about the origins of money, would get a good. Good run on the ABC.
We've got a good regular listener called Fred, who's been doing some marvellous work harassing people. He actually got a response from Andrew Lee, and to get any response from a high-ranking politician speaking about such things is amazing. So there's an appetite out there for this conversation.
If you're anything like me, when you started to get into MMT, you were one of those people. I don't know if anyone who's listening was like this. You just go through that shouting at the TV stage. Maybe you're still doing it. Whenever there's a bit of economic coverage.
Q&A has been cancelled. What a relief for those who watched it.
Don't speak ill of the dead. So
did you know, hang on Q&A, Bill Mitchell was scheduled to go on Q&A once.
Yes, we know this.
And I'm going to share this with our listeners. There was a Labor politician who, once he learned that Bill Mitchell was going to go on the show, said that if Bill goes on, I'm cancelling. So they cancelled Bill because that Labor politician knew that Bill would have torn his economic understanding to pieces. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, and I, look,
bastards, ABC, get your act together.
Here's the thing about that.
I think you got your hopes of Radio MMT migrating to RN just like maybe came down a peg.
You said so that. It's our ABC.
But James and I are still.
I'm going to speak in a little bit of defence of those journalists because, you know, some of the people that are talking economics, they're doing economic commentary. They're the people that have had the neoclassical training from university. But a lot of them are just journalists. They've gone through journalist schools. They'll sheepishly admit they actually don't know much economics. And so what they're kind of doing,
they go to the experts,
is this, they're following the dominant narrative. And I like to think of it, it's a bit like if someone said to me, James, you're going to be doing a report on netball. And I've actually been going to the netball because a friend of mine plays there regularly. I don't understand the rules, but I can get really enthusiastic about the score, particularly when she's winning, right? And that means that I can talk passionate about it, but I don't know when people are breaking the rules. I sometimes see journalists who's when the treasurer comes on and he's got a particular barrow to push, or they have some economist who comes on, they can always go on the attack passionately. What are you going to do about the deficit or something like that? And that's really easy for them to do. We could be conspiratorial about it and we could say, oh, it's because they're trying to go with the existing system. But actually, it's non-impartial commentary that kind of comes from ignorance. And that is why it's so important that everyone begins to understand.
Yeah. And the irony is that it makes them look like an informed journalist asking the smart question. I experienced the same thing around climate for years and years and years, and I won't name names at the ABC, but some of the stuff, particularly on Q&A, the sort of like asserted as fact, just was just mind-boggling.
So to answer the question, why do we need to know about MMT? I'm going to go back to the beginning. If you understand how your monetary system works, you understand what you can do with it. Now, the government controls the monetary system, and they do. It's written, if you take out any note in your wallet, it'll say, issued by the Reserve Bank of Australia. The Reserve Bank of Australia is the government's bank. It's not the private sector's bank. It's the government's bank. So obviously all money is created by the government. It's controlled by the government. How it's distributed and who gets it is a policy decisions. And if you don't understand the money story, you're going to make bad policies. And that's the very simple reason as to why you need to understand MMT, why we need to pressure journalists to ask the right questions, why we need to pressure politicians to get some learning, get some understanding. I know that Labor will not engage in these conversations. I used to be a member of the Labor Party. They don't want to have this conversation because they've put so much stock in running surpluses. They're told the wrong story for so long that they're going to look pretty foolish if they suddenly say, oh, hang on, we've just figured out that what we've understood how the economy to run is complete rubbish and we're going to have to change everything we've ever thought. They're too far into it now.
And yet in the US, this is 100% true. In Australia, it's fairly true. Every time a significant surplus is run by the government, the federal level, there's a recession follows like clockwork.
Yeah.
A big, why? Well, imagine you got
a recession or a contraction.
Let's use a household analogy. Imagine pulling money out of the household.
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
Government surplus equals private sector deficit. So a government surplus means that the government has just shrunk the economy. And they say, hey, we've just shrunk the economy, aren't we great? We go, no.
We're doing this for your grandchildren and your future generations. We've done this amazing, heroic thing.
Yeah, we've just shrunk the economy.
Fiscal responsibility.
We've set up a future fund by extinguishing $20 billion. Look, that'd be great if everybody was too rich and you needed to calm things down. The only time a government surplus is valid is if the economy is working for people at the wrong end of it. So if your poorest people are quite happy, then that's good. But that hasn't been the case here for a very long time. Our Indigenous population has been appallingly treated, etc. Now,
Kevin, I don't think we're going to get to explaining why it's important for people to understand this, because there's so much to cover, and I would love to come back with James and continue this. But for people in the meantime who would like to,
how do you find out more about this stuff?
James has got it.
Where would you go, James? Where would you go if you needed to find out more about this stuff?
Oh well, I would really like a drink and to chat about this, and that's something that we do monthly. This month it's going to be at the Union Club Hotel on the 27th, Friday the 27th. But actually, what we're doing is something pretty special. We did it last year. It's a little workshop. It's run primarily by students, but we may even have a special guest called Kevin, depending on what's happening with your van, you know, in a couple of weeks' time. Yes. What we're doing is a little workshop, and the way I love these is it's a way to experiment about talking about MMT and that sort of thing, and then engage with people, have breakout sessions where people come and ask questions. We're doing that at Torrens University on the 6th of July, Saturday. That's opposite Fed Square.
Opposite Fed Square, yep.
Yep, and if you want to find out about that, you can go to naarm.spag.au. That's naarm.spag.au. You can sign up to the mailing list there.
That sounds like a really good thing to do. These sessions are very user friendly. They are for novices to come in and people that know a few things, and there's a few people that know a lot of things. I am specifically non-academic because I find the academic talk confuses me a lot. So I tend to like to keep it in plain speak. But there's a good variety of people there. Like you can, and there's, I've still
got
a lot.
Hey? You'll find your person.
Yeah. And I need to have more things explained to me. We've got to get running because Mafal is coming up next. Hey, thank you, James. Thank you, Alistair, for being with us. It's been lovely. Hey, donate. And we haven't reached our target, so all of you people on the podcast, you need to donate, otherwise we're not going to make it.
Yes, I'm going outside to donate now.
Excellent. Catch you later, guys. See ya.
You've been listening to Radio MMT with Anne and Kev.
We'd love your feedback. Email us on radiommt@gmail.com or search Radio MMT on social media.
Listen to this show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or on 3cr.org.au/Radio MMT.
Support this show and the station by subscribing to 3cr.org.au and mention Radio MMT.
We thank all our guests.
And we thank economist Professor Bill Mitchell and his MMTED.org, educating masses on modern monetary theory.
And thank you to our listeners for listening. And I thank you, Kevin.
And I thank you, Anne. So what's planned for next week?
Kevin, there is still so much to talk about. We've got to expose all this rotten economics.
Well, that's good, and I get it. Do you reckon we could use a bit more music?
Well, I made a list of all these terrible economic theories. Like, have you heard of the theory of comparative advantage, or the quantity theory of money, or the loanable funds theory?
Have you heard of a band called Single Gun Theory? Like, they're a really good band. I'm sure there's a whole range of, like, macroeconomic music.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.